Support for Class Dismissed comes from School Status. School Status is the only K-12 data analytics platform designed to turn analysis into engagement. To learn more about how School Status can change your school district, head over to schoolstatus.com. You are listening to Class Dismissed, Episode 11, and I'm your host, Nick Ortego. A superintendent in Florida has declared no more homework, plus a software company has created something that could spell the end for those expensive Texas Instrument graphing calculators, and you may be surprised to hear which country is now being referred to as an education superpower. Stay with us. Dismissed is the podcast that inspires educators through story. Each week we cover some of the hottest topics and news in the world of education, plus we speak with a guest with a bright idea for education that you can apply in your community. This week we have Dr. Jim Gentry. Dr. Gentry is a college professor in Texas who is dyslexic, and he's dedicated his life to teaching future educators how to help kids like him learn. Hey everybody, Nick Ortego here, and I'm joined with teacher extraordinaire Lissa Pruitt, and we have education data expert Russ Davis of School Status. Lissa, how you doing?
I'm great.
Russ, how's it going on your end?
I'm doing good, but I'm hot.
It's hot. It's hot, definitely. We're in the South, so admittedly it's hot here, but I know you probably keep up with the weather like I do, and it looks like our friends in Portland, Oregon, are getting blasted, aren't they?
I think they were 103 degrees yesterday, shattering a 30-year record. And you know, whenever you think about places like, you know, like Death Valley or Las Vegas or places like that where your shoes melt when they touch the sidewalk, that's fine.
Yeah.
But only, I read a thing the other day that said like only 75% of the people in Portland have AC, like air conditioning, because they're known for their mild winters. So,
oh my gosh, that's great.
And it's the perfect time really to start school, right? So I got to ask the crew, like, how many of you remember riding the bus with zero air conditioning?
My bus never had air conditioning.
Never. Like, no, the bus driver had a fan on them.
Yeah, exactly. The bus driver had that one plug-in fan. Yes. They were up there in the lap of luxury. Meanwhile, you're back there in the rattle trap with the windows rolled down, trying to breathe a little bit of that hot air.
Yeah.
Well, I think schools now buy buses that have two things: tinted windows and air conditioning.
And so the tinted windows aren't for security purposes. They're to
keep
the sun out.
Not just for protecting the students.
I don't think I've seen those buses around these parts.
They're certainly out there. They're replacing them one by one. And whenever they buy a school bus, a lot of schools buy, obviously, school buses with air conditioning. And you can imagine, because it seems to be getting hotter and hotter and hotter, regardless of what, you know, what you may feel politically, but like it's hotter outside today than it was 2 weeks ago. And I just feel so sorry for those kids starting school who have to board that, like, you remember the seats? Like, they had that, like, leather grain print.
Are you doing air quotes when you say leather?
Yeah, exactly. Like, okay. that print, you know, like the faux leather print. Like, they put some texture on the seats. But those seats were the stickiest, least, like, or most heat-conducting seats in the history of man.
Well, and that half of them had duct tape on them.
That's exactly right. Or somebody had burned them with a cigarette lighter or something like that. Like,
what?
That was in the 70s.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like, that's like they had, like, you'd see like burn spots on the back. Maybe I went to a rougher school.
Yeah. You went to that school in, what was the movie with
Dangerous Minds?
No. I'm thinking of the one with Matthew McConaughey.
Stand by
Me? No, the one with Matthew McConaughey.
Oh,
Dazed and Confused.
Dazed and Confused. Yeah, maybe I was.
That was Robert E. Lee High School in that movie, and that was the same high school name that I went to in Virginia, Robert E. Lee High
School. You went to Robert E. Lee High School in Virginia?
Yes, that's another segment and another topic.
Absolutely. Moving on.
Moving on. So let's go ahead and jump into the teacher's lounge. Lissa, what do you know? Are you hearing anything good?
Yeah, there's a new superintendent in Marion County Schools of Florida, and she's shaking things up a little bit. She's changing homework. She's basically doing away with homework.
Sign me up. I'm going back to school.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's like, yes, she's amazing. But she's basing this on research out of the University of Tennessee by Richard Allington. He basically said, you know what, the homework that we assign in America, based on his research, proves to be ineffective, and that if children would just read each night for 20 minutes, they would do better, go farther, open their minds to more, become more fluent, and then start assigning homework in the middle school grade. So it's not no homework for anyone. It's just K through just, five.
Okay. Elementary
and it's
kids.
Like, yeah, it's like, you know, a lot of schools, I mean, in the Florida area, that's they're starting schools, you know, in the next couple of weeks with no homework.
Just to read. That's their homework.
Just to read.
Which, whatever I mean, they want, I guess.
Yep. They get to choose. And they said that they will assign some homework that would be like maybe a reading project or like a science experiment, things like that. But that for the most part, reading.
Did you guys have summer reading lists in school?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I did not. Like I went to a high school. We did not have a summer reading list that I recall.
We had to take a test when we came back to school to prove that we had read those books.
I would have failed that test quite easily.
I think this is a great idea, but it's going to take good parents to make sure that you're actually reading.
Right, because what you don't want is these kids to all jump on, you know, their devices and stuff and they're not doing anything. Like, I am sure that the teachers will do their part to measure their reading, you mm-hmm. know, like to make sure that there are maybe some morning bell work quizzes or whatever for them to be able to write in journals or whatever about what they read the night before so that they do feel accountable.
Can I just say that I feel like a broken record because I think I say these words every single episode. Parents, read to your children.
Yeah, they
will read for life. You will not have to ask them to read. They will read every day by themselves. You will not have to force them. Please, please, please read to your child from the moment they can open their eyes.
I would imagine that, I mean, this is a slam dunk for the superintendent in Florida. Her name's Heidi Mayer. She, you know, she's kind of trying to be cutting edge. And I'm sure there's not going to be a lot of people to come right out and say, no, don't take away our 2 hours a night of homework, you know. But I would imagine the teachers are a little concerned because they're the ones held accountable for testing results and things like that. So I know that they, especially the first teacher I think of is a math teacher. You know, math is one of those things that you do need constant repetition. You know, those especially memorizing multiplication facts and things.
Third grade.
So I do know that that's going to probably be tough for math teachers.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's no novel that helps you learn math.
Yeah. So, we spoke on a previous podcast of ours about, you know, sometimes it's this research that comes across in education is great and it's exciting and new, but you have to be careful, you know, and plus it takes a lot of time to see the results. So truly what is happening in Florida right now, you know, we may not see the positive ramifications of this for a while.
I'm going to put in my calendar to contact the superintendent from Marion County, Florida, a year from now. And I'm going to see if we can't get that person on the show and just see, like, how did it go? Like, how was the first year? Is this something you're still doing? I would love to hear that person's perspective.
So can I just say something real quick? Like, sure. Can I make a confession since, you know, this is not like taxicab confessions or whatever, but I just want to say that in the eighth grade, my eighth grade math class, we had a teacher that really didn't pay very much attention. Like, we kind of figured out, or at least I figured out about halfway through, that there was no way he was grading homework each night. And he gave homework each and every night. And there were 12 and 13 questions. And what I figured out, I didn't do my homework one night, and that we would fold our paper in half, and then we'd write our name and the period on it. And then as we were turning it in, he was marking it off, right? Without looking on the inside of it. So I then determined that I didn't have to do homework ever again. And so I just didn't do homework for the better part of a semester. Well, there was a guy in front of me, a guy named Marco Raines, that figured out the same thing. So he and I were kind of scamming the system. Well, one day I did do the homework and he didn't. And he got flat busted. I mean,
were you just like handing in a blank piece of paper? Folded?
Yeah, I was handing in a blank piece of paper. The guts that took to hand in a blank piece of paper.
I would die of fear. I couldn't even go through the rest of the day.
I'll tell you that whenever you watch the guy in front of you do the thing that you've been doing the whole year, and then he gets made an example of in the front of the classroom and embarrassed, you'll do the homework from there on out. Like, and he was just glaring at me the entire time because he knew. Like, and then the next time, like from then on out, he started looking at all the homework and stuff like that. So that's my homework confession, that if you give homework and you're not going to bother to check it, then why are you even worried about it?
I know. And teachers should, they should not do that. I have never assigned something that I don't check, not only for completion, but also for accuracy.
So kind of speaking of homework and math homework, Russ, I know you've got a story that kind of plays into the math, right?
Yeah, there's an article that came out in Education Week from June, and it's talking about the infamous Texas Instruments graphing calculator. These were the bane of my existence whenever I was in high school because they were so expensive and you had to have them for algebra and they were helpful for geography and you absolutely must for trig, right? And so basically this article starts talking about these guys over at Desmos.com, which have built an embedded graphing calculator that mirrors the functionality of the TI-80X, whatever that is. But get this. Those calculators have not come down in price at all. Zero.
That's ridiculous.
So I just checked Amazon, right? So Amazon is pretty much the cheapest place to buy anything in the whole world as far as I'm concerned. Like, we spend a significant portion of our income goes to Jeff Bezos, which, by the way, is why he's the richest man in the world.
Wait. He actually, I need to update from the last show. He was the richest man for like a that day, and then the stock market dropped a little bit, or his stock did, and now he's the second, I think, or something.
I so still think he's okay.
Yeah, he's all right.
I don't think he's going to be panhandling anytime soon.
I'm not worried about it.
But look, listen to this. Frustration-free packaging TI-84 plus graphing calculator. Do you guys want to take a guess on how much it is?
93.
$99.99.
Okay.
$99. You can get one. Hey, you can get one factory recertified. I guess it didn't add correctly, and they made it add correctly. For $96.
So you said Desmos. Is that another calculator? Is it for the web? What is it?
It's for the web. It's a graphing calculator that you can download on your phone, both Google and the App Store. But what they're starting to do now on these tests that kids are taking online, so like a lot of assessment is moved online, like and some people do Smarter Balance, some people do PARC, some people do their local state assessments. They've started using this embedded calculator, which is free. And it costs nothing. Yeah, essentially, you can download it. These guys basically said, we're going to fix this problem, and they did. And so they created this online calculator that it's way more interactive. Like, by the way, the technology in the calculator has also not changed at all. Right. It's not like the screens are color or like you can do more with it. Like, it's still like, you know, like creating programs line by line, and like, you know, you have to have the special program to calculate y equals mx plus b, like all that stuff, right? Like, none of that's changed. It's exactly the same. Whenever I was in high school, we had these calculators, and essentially there was an attachment that you could use to hook it up to the overhead projector,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that is the same technology they're using with the graphing calculators. They have a graph link now that lets you hook it to a computer if you want to, but now they're using Desmos, where like I can just project my screen. Like, you know, most people have a projector in their classroom now, and now they're using that. Incidentally, I did learn in high school that if you put that graph link overhead projector graphing calculator extension on a projector and you left it there for more than, say, 30 seconds, you could hear the skin on your teacher's hand searing whenever they put their hand back down on the overhead projector because it was trying to project through like a black surface. It just got very, very hot. So I can't tell you how many times I heard my algebra teacher say,
smell like burning hair.
Sugar. Yeah, like he would say sugar instead of the word, right? I don't want to get bleeped again. So anyway, Desmos is like just blowing it up. And I love this form of disruption because
why is it taking this long?
Yeah, that's a great question. Like, students have phones, right? Why can't they just download this and use this instead or figure out some other way? But, like, why is Texas Instruments, they sell, I was looking at the article, they sold 5 million graphing calculators last year. That's insane.
Well, I do have to say that in order to take the ACT or SAT, they're not going to let you use a phone or a tablet of any sort. So Desmos needs to come up with a more affordable calculator for them to use on those assessments, because that's why they're still selling probably as much as they're selling, because there are strict guidelines for those standardized tests that you are not allowed to have anything but that, you know, certain type of calculator.
What, then in that case, my question is, why doesn't ACT or the College Board buy their own dang calculators and hand those out for use on the test? Like, why is it incumbent upon me to buy a $100 calculator to take this test, yeah, in which I'm already paying, you know, whatever the amount that the ACT is? I don't even know how much it is these days. I guarantee you the cost of the ACT has probably stayed the same or gone down a little bit, but I can guarantee you the cost of the calculator to take the test is artificially high. And I don't know whether they had some sort of patent or something like that, or just nobody wanted to make graphing calculators. But this is an example of what happens when the free market, like no one, there are no other entrants into the free market. Mm-hmm. And then these guys at Desmos, I mean, Texas Instruments makes $13.37 billion in revenue a year. They have 30,000 employees. Graphing calculators are a tiny portion of their business. TI right. does a lot of stuff, right? Right. But why haven't other companies entered into this market? I don't understand.
The only thing
it.
I can think of is the schools are like, you need to get a TI. Because they're so specific.
That's exactly
you need to
right.
get a TI 84, the 83.
When I taught pre-algebra and algebra, I was very specific of the exact calculator I wanted them to get, even to the...
So you're the problem.
No, it's because when you're teaching, number one, you don't want them to use a calculator that they won't be able to use on the ACT or SAT at the end of the year. You want them to be 100% savvy and really fluent with that calculator. So teachers will be, usually they'll say, you know, it has to be this type because this one's allowed on the ACT.
Think about this. When I was in high school, I remember my parents buying a DVD player for $199. It was a GE DVD player and it sucked. It was the worst DVD player ever, right? That's so. In the same year, I remember them buying me a TI 82, I think, for like $115.
Right.
Okay. I just looked on Amazon. The cheapest DVD player they offer on Amazon is $19.99 and it plays Blu-rays. So, yeah. Like, it's actually added functionality over the years, whereas these guys really just haven't done anything. Like, this is the exact same thing. Year over year. And I think you're right. I think that they were very smart and they got schools embedded into using this specific device. They got lock-in. And whenever you have a lock-in, it's no longer a free marketplace.
Did you guys gotcha. Hear our friend, Woe Susanna, his latest rant about school supplies, where
funny.
She talks about the graphing calculator? Have y'all heard this?
No, I did not.
Hey, y'all. It's Woe Susanna. Today, we're going to talk about school supplies. Just got back from the Walmarts and spent $350 per
Walmarts.
Child. On school supplies. I mean, I could go have dinner at the White House for less money, okay? My daughter's 11. She needs 2 4-inch binders. Have you ever seen a 4-inch binder? You could put a twin-size mattress in it, hold 60,000 sheets of paper. Now, what does an 11-year-old need with something that holds 60,000 sheets? Is she working for the Pentagon? Don't get me started on these graphing calculators. They cost more than a fully loaded Kia. Not even kidding.
And I should say, just... folks are wondering, who's this Woe Susanna? If you aren't familiar with her, she's got a big following on Facebook now, woesusanna.com. But on Facebook, I think she has over 1 million followers. And I'm pretty sure she's based out of Tennessee, from the best I can tell.
She's hilarious.
From that delicious yeah. accent, I would assume so.
And there is no S on the end of Walmart, but Walmart's. I love it when she adds one in there.
So I would like to say that School Status is taking a real interest in this, and we are actually in the process of working with some of our local schools in the areas in which we live. We're getting a list of the most needed school supplies, the most needed like personal hygiene items, things like that. And we're going to make a big delivery to all of the local schools that are in the areas of our offices and things like that. So
that's great.
Just trying to help out a little bit, you know, like I talked to a superintendent the other day who said that they like intentionally limit the school supply list to $25. Like, he just told teachers, like, if you can't get it done for $25, like, then tough, like, pick what you need the most. But I know that's not the case everywhere.
So have you guys heard about Canada?
I've heard of it, yes.
Yes, it's not just the home of the Property Brothers. It also apparently is an education superpower. You're not a fan of the Property Brothers?
They just kind of creep me
they
out.
They are kind of creepy.
They creep me out.
They do
kind of
creep me out yeah. just
and
a little
like,
bit.
I'm a twin, so like I shouldn't be creeped by them, but I don't know. Something's
we're totally
off.
They're too identical. Like they haven't aged apart at all, right?
Yeah,
like
right.
Usually, like They start out and then they kind of look at
one sells real estate, one builds houses.
But I think what creeps me is that they try so hard to be different, to have these like different, and they're like not different. So it's like, then it's creepy.
Well, they're obviously smart because they're making lots of money, and they went through the Canadian education system, which apparently is now being classified as a superpower. The BBC just wrote a story. It says how Canada became an education superpower. And they say there's these tests, which I'm not familiar with. I'm sure there's probably people listening who are, but I think they're called PISA tests. It's almost like an international type of round of testing.
I know it.
Okay, there you go. And then you usually get schools like in Asia, Singapore, South Korea, and then some of the Nordic schools, Finland and Norway, that do really well. But now Canada has climbed to this top tier. And they're one of the handful of the countries to appear in the top 10 for math, science, and reading. And so this whole article is about, like, when did this happen? How did it happen? What did they do? Any thoughts?
I just chalk it up to Justin Trudeau. He appears to be the reason why Canada is doing so well for everything, right? Maybe it's Trudeau.
Yeah, maybe. You know, apparently they don't have a national education system. It's actually based on autonomous provinces. So the actual report said described the role of their federal government as limited and sometimes non-existent. Now, whether or not that's the right answer is certainly up for debate, but that's one of the things they're pointing to.
You know, we know surprisingly little about our neighbors to the north.
Yes.
I do know this. I know that they don't lock their doors. Like, they are like a completely trusting society. I remember watching a documentary.
I've been to Vancouver and I locked my door, just so you know.
I'm just saying, this documentary I watched said that this guy like went from door to door, this journalist, and like would open the door, and like people, you know, didn't lock their doors. They were just kind of like, well, crime rate's so low.
While there is no actual like federal overarching system that's monitoring education, it doesn't seem like there is a big uniting theme of equity, and there's a common commitment to an equal chance in school. And there's a lot of migrants in Canada, and they are just making sure that they're all educated equally, and that's kind of across the board. But they are way up on the list. And in fact, if you actually like strip out some key provinces like Alberta, British Columbia, and Quebec, they would be in the top five places for science in the world, alongside Singapore and Japan and Finland and Hong Kong. And it's like, did this happen?
I mean, that's the thing, is that, you know, you ask my opinion, that just shocks me, because I guess I wouldn't think of Canada in that way.
We actually went to Toronto to do some business up there with a software company that is a student information package vendor. And I learned a lot about how their education system works, as far as like they are largely independent, but the provinces do tend to do the same thing. Like, they have independent school districts in the provinces, but generally, like, as one goes, the rest of them will go, I guess. So it's kind of handled like on a state level. But what I did learn, I went to a Raptors game. They're in Toronto, the team. I got great seats. I was like five rows up from the floor, that kind of thing. And they play lots of Drake. Like,
he's from Canada, right?
He is from Canada. I think he's from the Toronto area. They play lots of Drake and lots of Justin Bieber.
They are so
proud of those exports. But like every other, you know, like if you go to like an NBA or an NFL game, like they play like, you know, different songs during the like interludes, or like the little games that the cheerleaders play and stuff like that. Drake. Like that the whole time at the Raptors game, like every other song was Drake. And then Drake was there. And so they had they zoomed in on Drake. Like if you're Drake and you're sitting there and you keep hearing your songs over and over again, are you a little embarrassed? Yeah. Or like, oh yeah, this is my royalty check coming in from the NBA. Like,
well, maybe he's just like, wow, you know, I'm home and these people love me and they support me no matter what. You know, the winner of The Bachelor, Vanessa, she's Canadian. Nick,
can we edit that out?
Yeah, it's not going to be on the show. You know who my favorite Canadian is Alex Trebek. We actually posted a story on classdismissedpodcast.com about two teachers that met on Jeopardy! And ended up getting married years later, but they actually met in the green room on Jeopardy! During the teacher week that they have on Jeopardy! So if you want to check that story out,
head on over to the website. Did one beat the other one? Like, did they beat each other?
They didn't play against each other, but the wife, the female, did better than he did. He was actually winning going into, I think, Final Jeopardy, and then like he, apparently lost it's a real it source all. Source subject.
All right, are you guys ready for today's Brad Idea segment?
Yep.
We have a gentleman who actually teaches future educators at a university over in Texas about all sorts of things, but one of those things being special education and teaching students with dyslexia. But he's actually pretty open about being dyslexic himself. So a really interesting perspective. Our guest in today's Bright Idea segment is just outside of Dallas, Texas at Tarleton State University. He's a professor in the College of Education, and he spends much of his time preparing our future educators. Dr. Jim Gentry, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I reached out to you after I read a really interesting article about your teaching perspective. One of the things you do as a professor is you teach students how to work with kids with special abilities, including dyslexia. And you make no secret of the fact that you have dyslexia yourself. In fact, it sounds like you use that perspective to better educate our teachers. Yes. Do I have that right?
That's right. When I look back at my struggles or challenges, I realize that, you know, especially as an adult now and getting to know working with kids and so forth, I have realized that we all have challenges. And I found that we needed three things, and I share these with my students, and they're really basic things that I think we as humans need. And for example, I know that we all need to have a sense of belonging, a sense of purpose, and we need to love and be loved. And I know that's really philosophical, and I know that's kind of out there, but at the same time, it's not, because I really believe it's what we need. And so as a child, I was trying to belong. I went to elementary school and realized really quickly that the purpose of elementary school, or at least how I perceived it, was I should be able to read, and I couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. I was not able to read. And I looked around and saw that I was failing in the job that I was required to do. No one came up to me and called me a failure necessarily, but I did see it and sense it nonetheless, right?
Right.
And the people who I really held to were teachers who, for whatever reason, they didn't know what dyslexia was. This is the 70s, and no one really, you know, knew what this thing dyslexia was. Like, it's called word blindness for a while, and they just helped me. They just tried, and those people really made a difference in my life. In that, I'll never forget one teacher just doing puppets, and she was just trying to get me to enjoy reading and the story, and she pulled out puppets, and we did this puppet thing, and it really made a difference for me. And so that would later lead me to want to be a teacher.
What was the moment for you when you were in college that you realized, or maybe outside of college, that you realized, I'm going to do something with my challenge and make it actually a goal in life to teach other people how to teach this?
The people who meant something to me, the people who really invested in me and didn't even know what was wrong with me and didn't really care what was wrong with me. They just wanted to help me. They were all teachers, every one of them. So why not be a teacher? They were my hero. They're my heroes in life. They were the people who just wanted to help me. So that led me to that. And I don't know. It's I feel so privileged that, you know, in America, teaching is not always the most respected profession. Like, I never see a medical doctor in a group of people go, I'm a medical doctor. No one says, I'm so sorry. No one says that.
Right.
But they do to teachers. Why is that? Why in this country does that have to happen? And I started thinking about that and realizing these were the greatest people. They made such a difference in my life. I wouldn't be where I am without them. Why are they not respected in this society? And so when I think about the greatest thing you could call me, you call me a teacher.
I imagine each semester you probably tell a new group of students that you had to work through a dyslexic childhood and through school. What's
Yes.
your students' reaction to that when you tell them that?
Many of my students are surprised. But I've also had some really unique reactions from professors and students. What I've learned is once you open up to people, you know, Nick, once you do that, people open up to you. As I've opened up, I've gotten to know people better. And my students come up to me and say, Dr. Gentry, I'm struggling with this. This is hard for me. or I have dyslexia too, and wow, you have dyslexia? I meet freshmen who are in those remedial classes, just like I was. Mm-hmm. They're not in regular college. They're taking non-credit remedial classes, and they're embarrassed by it. I remember how I was too. And they said, I'm hoping I'll make it. They talked to me like that. I remember, and I looked at them and said, you know, I was that way too. And they're surprised. I said, you know, I'm an author, I'm published, I teach, but I was where you are right now. I've been there where I didn't know if I was going to be able to do it.
What's the most important thing for educators to know about teaching children with dyslexia? What's the one thing you want to drive home to them?
They can read. The word dyslexia means you have trouble reading or you can't read. The fact is they can. They do it. They just do it in different ways, and their brains are just not connected the same. The trick is finding a way to help them read and help and make sense of this language with the sounds, the phonics, the things that we confuse. And it can be done. There's a group of research and strategies based on Orton-Gillingham. Orton-Gillingham method is what primarily dyslexic teachers who are working with dyslexia students, they use. And what's funny to me is this started long ago, and now all this multidisciplinary, you know, approaches, there. When I look at those that people think are new today, people that are working with dyslexia that were making those inroads were already doing that, like at Scottish Rite Hospital and teachers who just knew that they had to find another way to engage their students.
What does a dyslexic child, in your opinion, want their teacher to know about them?
I think that as a dyslexia child, you want your teacher to know that, hey, I'm a student. I'm smart. I'm intelligent. I can learn. It may take me a little while. I may struggle, but don't give up on me because I can do this.
And I'm glad you said that. There's a whole list of extremely successful people that have had the challenge of dyslexia. And what strengths do you think dyslexic people maybe have, even though they may struggle to read a little bit? Do you feel like they have typically strengths in another area?
Yes. If you look at the research, you'll find that people with dyslexia, they think differently. We've also, because we struggle with things like left and right and knowing where we are and getting things, we develop things to help us systematically look at things. That's probably why when you look at great people that have had dyslexia, they're sometimes scientists. They're doing these meticulous things they're not supposed to do, and yet they were able to do it. Another thing that I think that helps dyslexia people is we have to look at the whole picture. We really want to know where we're headed. And so at the same time, we can be systematic and look at the details, but we can also be whole picture oriented at the same time because we have to be.
You were growing up at a time, as you said, where it was a little bit more difficult to receive the proper education. Wasn't the awareness. How have we come along, in your opinion?
Oh, my word. We have come so well. Matter of fact, I'm in Texas, right? And Texas has lots of challenges with its educational system, lots of difficulties here and there, and you read about those. But one of the things that Texas has done well is it was one of the first states to pass a law recognizing dyslexia and recognizing that we should treat it and work with it. Another thing that's really amazing is Texas, by law, has that if you are a dyslexic person, you should receive treatment and help because of that in any Texas public school. Some schools don't have that, and I'm proud of that. That's one thing I can say that Texas is doing right.
Jim Gentry, again, I appreciate you taking the time to share your story and being so open. I think it's something that you probably really connect with a lot of your students and give them a different perspective, those that maybe are struggling with a similar challenge and those that aren't. So,
yes. So
again, we really appreciate you. Are you ready for our pop quiz?
I am ready, I think.
All right. If students could only go to school for one subject, which subject should it be?
I would definitely say reading, because reading is everything. If you need mathematics, you need to be able to read. Reading is thinking. It's everything.
What are we not teaching in school that we should be teaching?
I think that we should teach service. That we should teach kids that serving others is the greatest thing that a person can do. Being a servant, sharing, helping. We need more of that. Getting in our communities, helping our communities, being connected that way through, and not just reading about it, studying about it, but doing something.
What does every child deserve?
Every child deserves to have a proper education. Every child deserves to have teachers who care about who they are and is willing to learn and do whatever it takes to help that child be successful.
What's the biggest challenge for today's educators?
One of the big challenges, we've quantified kids to such an extent. I'm not against testing, by the way, Nick. I know we need it. I know that we've had some things in education that that were not good, and that testing came about because of that. But in so many ways, we have made children numbers. And I hear kids being referred to as bubble kids or this type of kid. I don't like that. By the way, I was not a bubble kid. And by the way, a bubble kid is a kid that they believe can pass the test if just a little help.
Gotcha.
But if you're not a bubble kid, that means you're either making it and you're gifted or whatever, and you're going to pass the test. Or you might be like me, a kid that was in special ed. I'm so glad that that didn't exist, because maybe the teachers would have called me, well, he's not going to pass, because I probably wouldn't have passed. It scares me when I see that we have made kids numbers.
What do you think the best gift is to give an educator?
A note from a student, a letter or something like that I'm most proud of. I have all these letters that kids have given me from my sixth graders, my fourth graders. And I have my college degrees, but and I'm proud of my doctorate and I have all that. But you know what? I hang up the letters that my kids have given me. That's my strength. That's my, when things get hard, I look at that and I see what that kid said to me so many years ago. And my college students also give me notes as well. And well, that's a reward, because it's heart stuff. It's why we chose education. We definitely didn't choose it to be rich, you know?
And the irony is that type of gift cost them nothing. And
no.
And it's the most important to you. So that's good.
Yeah.
What teacher changed your life?
Wow. There's actually several. But one of them was Greta Nutt, my fourth grade teacher. I'll never forget. Some of the kids had kind of made fun of me a little bit. I forget who it was, but I was in the hallway crying. I was called a flunker. I'd been held back in school, and I just so sad. I just felt like a failure. I remember that distinctly, and I was crying. And Miss Nutt came up to me, and this was the teacher who used puppets and did all these things with me. And I just told her what was going on, and she looked at me and she said, "Jim, you are smart. You know that? You're a smart boy. And you're going to be okay. And you are reading. You're reading the pictures. And we're talking about it. And you're getting some of the words. Let's talk about some of those words, you know." I never felt so good. That was probably one of the most critical conversations I needed in my life. And I still reflect on that. And I've actually thanked her for her kindness.
So you gave her the best gift that you can give her.
I did. You know? I gave her a letter.
Yeah, that's great. Last question, pen or pencil?
Oh, pencil always.
Dr. Jim Gentry, again, we really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us. And hopefully there's some educators out there who are going to really take your words to heart.
Thank you, Nick. It's been a pleasure being with you today.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's
that's going to do it for episode 11 of Class Dismissed. We want to hear from you, so if you want to send us an idea or comment, remember that you can email us at info@classdismissedpodcast.com. We're here to support educators, but we need your support as well. So if you like what you heard today, please be sure and subscribe to the show, and we'd also love it if you'd leave us a 5-star review. Those are what keep us going. Don't forget you can connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/classdismissedpodcast or on Twitter. Just search for us by typing in Class Dismiss. On behalf of Russ with School Status and Lissa representing all the teachers out there, I'm Nick Ortigo, and I'll talk with you next week.
Class Dismissed.